In the early rush of morning, trying to get the kids to school. One's hanging on my shirt tail, another's locked up in her room. And I'm yelling up the stairs, stop worrying about your hair, you look fine. Then they're fighting in the backseat, and I'm playing referee. Now someone's gotta go the moment that we leave, and everybody's late. I swear I can't wait till they grow up. Then they do, and that's how it is. It's just quiet in the morning. Can't believe how much you miss.
Next right now is Trace Adkins. He has a brand new greatest hits collection out, and quite a very interesting comparison between the two new songs on it. You got one of them, Then They Do, which is a great ode to fatherhood, which I, as a father of two, really enjoyed. And then the other one, Welcome to Hell, which is kind of a message for terrorists. Kind of an interesting juxtaposition between the two new songs.
Well, yeah, you know, sensitive Trace and hardcore Trace, I guess, you know. But, you know, anytime I'm talking about my kids, that's how I feel. And then when I'm talking about the other subject, you know, that's how I feel too. So, you know, I really didn't expect them to ever include Welcome to Hell on anything. I wrote the song and just kind of played it for some guys at the label, and they liked it. And I was really surprised when they wanted to put it on here, to tell you the truth.
Now, Then They Do, I noticed that there's a video out. I have not seen it. Does it have your children in it?
No, it doesn't have much. It's actors, you know. I don't know. We didn't want to put the kids in there, you know. It was a hard day for those kids, too. It was a long day.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a great song, and of course anybody who's a parent can readily, you know, every father out there is like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've got four daughters ranging in age from 18 years to 21 months, so, you know, every line in that song is either something I have experienced or am experiencing or expect to in the future, so, you know, it's a really special song to me. I mean, it hits me hard. It was hard for me to record it. I had to take several runs at it before I could get through it without getting a lump in my throat.
I thought the interesting thing was most of the songs that I'm familiar with that you wrote. This one sounds like something you'd write, but you didn't actually write it.
Well, the songs that I record that I didn't write are usually all that way. You know, I hear a song and I think, oh man, I could have wrote that, or it sounds like it was written about me or for me. And, you know, that's just the kind of stuff I record. You know, most of the stuff I record is pretty much autobiographical.
I'm always interested in people's life stories, and yours is very interesting. Growing up in, was it Louisiana?
Yeah.
And the son of a factory worker and a school teacher. And I guess you had a taste of country music. You played guitar when you were young and had a taste of country music when you were in high school. And you also played football, too, at the same time.
Yeah. Well, country music was all that was ever played in my home growing up. My father was and still is a huge country music fan, and he had a pretty decent collection of albums that I wish I still had. And, you know, that's all that was ever played in our home or in the car or truck, or, you know, that's all he listened to and that's all we listened to. It was the only music I knew until I got old enough to start buying some of my own, you know.
You also did some gospel music too, didn't you?
Yeah, I sang bass in a gospel quartet. I started doing that when I was 17, and, you know, it was just some guys in our church that wanted to put together a little group, and so that's, you know, we did, and I kind of had a deep voice, and, you know, now I listen back to some of those recordings, and, you know, it's only obvious it was a, you know, 18-year-old kid trying his best to sing bass, and
the other thing that I thought was interesting, too, was that you were already, by the time you were 18, you were about 6'6", and you bulked up to about 240 to play football. So you were a pretty big guy there playing guitar and singing.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always been pretty tall. I didn't really start filling out, though, until I got to college. So I was always pretty skinny, you know.
So then you took the macho route, and you went and joined the oil field, and there's no more macho thing than working on an offshore rig.
Yeah, I loved it, man. It was just the coolest job. I enjoyed working in the oil field. I enjoyed the camaraderie. Being on a team again, you know, it was almost like organized sports if you were getting paid for it, and it was full contact, too. I mean, people were always getting hurt. Busted up and cut up.
Well, you actually got hurt and almost lost a leg, from what I understand.
Yeah, a leg and finger and, you know, bones and stuff. And got scars on my head from cables snapping and hitting me and stuff. It was a dangerous job. That's what I liked about it. It seemed like the more dangerous it got, you know, the better I liked it. I mean, there's no greater adrenaline rush than the fear that you could be about to die.
Well, that's true. One of the things that is interesting, too, is that your fellow workers on the oil rig, they're the ones that heard you playing and singing and said, hey, you know, you got to join up with a band, you know? And you joined Bayou Speakeasy, right?
Right, yeah. It was a band called Bayou out of Lafayette, Louisiana. There was a guy on the rig that knew those boys and said, man, you ought to come down sometime and play with them, you know? And I said, yeah, sure, it could be fun. So I did, and it just kind of, you know, it just evolved from there and got completely out of control, and here I am now, you know.
Now, at the time, I guess, weren't you doing like 300 shows a year? And also, weren't you married then, too, to your high school sweetheart?
Yeah, right, yeah.
So it took a toll.
Yeah, well, yeah, it did. It cost me my first marriage and about everything I owned at that time, you know. I mean, I built myself up. Pretty nice little life there, working offshore and making good money, and then I left that for 4 years to go play clubs and in the hopes that something bigger would happen, and it didn't. And but in the meantime, I lost about everything, and finally just couldn't handle it anymore and went back to work in the oil field for another 3 years or so before I moved up here in 92
to Nashville.
Yeah.
And again, I hate to bring it up, but I guess you had another marriage that didn't do too well, too. And from what I understand, your ex shot you in the chest?
Yeah.
Talking about
that. Yeah, well, you know, we just, something got out of hand there. And, you know, I don't think she meant to do it, but nonetheless, it did. The bullet went through my heart, and I was in the hospital for about a month. Had to have a couple of open heart surgeries following that, so you know it did some damage.
Now, do you ever? I assume that you don't regularly speak to this woman anymore.
No, I don't. No, I don't know where she's at, even to tell you the truth.
So after that, you're then settling in Nashville, and you got a producer, and you're signed to Capitol Records, and from there, life takes off. The hits start coming in 96, and you got voted the Academy of Country Music's 1997 Top New Male Vocalist and Country Weekly, and all these, everybody started honoring you, and life is good and gold.
Well, you know, this job, this career, it can be really frustrating, you know, especially for somebody that comes from the blue-collar background that I do. You know, you don't have very much patience for incompetence and people dragging their feet, and you know, because working in the oil field, it's, you know, it's just reach and get it all day long, every day, and you know, people just don't have much patience for lazy people, or you know, and politics doesn't have a whole lot to do with, you know, a day's work, and then you get in this gig and it's wrought with politics, and not always the best man wins, and you know, sometimes that stuff just kind of it can take its toll on you after a while if you're wired like I am. I've had some hard times, you know, struggling with that kind of stuff. But, you know, I can't complain about it. It's a good job.
Absolutely. It's interesting, you know, because I know Billy Ray Cyrus pretty well, and I've watched what happened with his career. And, you know, it really depends on how much energy your record company's putting into you, into marketing you. And there's so many different things that are part of success in this business.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing. You go in the studio and you do the best you can. You do your live shows, you do the best you can. But then everything else is just pretty much out of your hands, you know. I mean, you can poke and prod and beg and, you know, all you want to. But if, you know, the other pieces of the machine are just not working in sync, it's just not going to do a lot of good.
Mm. Now, Trace, I think that deep down inside you there does lurk a Southern rocker, doesn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, I love the Noah Little that you cut for the King of the Hill movie, and you did the legs on the ZZ Tribute TV
right.
show. So you do have that down deep down inside, that sound, the Lynyrd Skynyrd lives inside you.
Yeah, well, you know, and in my live show, you know, I do some Marshall Tucker and some Atlanta Rhythm Section. I've done some Skynyrd before and you know, 38 Special. I love that music.
The Greatest Hits Collection, Volume 1, did you at all think about, hey, you know, Greatest Hits, it's usually the conclusion of a career. I think I want to wait on this. Or, did the record company say, hey, no, this is a good time, Trace, to do this?
Well, that was the first thing I thought, because we went to the studio last fall and started recording, and I thought we were just recording for a new album, and then, you know, like the first of the year, I heard from the label, hey, we want to put out a Greatest Hits project, and I thought, oh, God, you know, because there really are only two reasons why you put out a Greatest Hits project. You either legitimately have the hits and it's time to do it, or it is the last desperate act, you know. So I guess we'll just wait and see which way it is, but, you know, we're about finished with our next album, so, you know, I don't think they're about to cut me off or anything.
No, I don't think so either. In fact, I'm sure this album's going to do really well. And one of the great things about a Greatest Hits album is that it sometimes will introduce you to people who don't know you. Someone might hear Then They Do and go, wow, this is great, and then they purchase the Greatest Hits and they go, wow, this guy is good.
Well,
and they wait for your next stuff to come out.
Well, that's good. You know, that's what we hope will happen. And you know, but I'm proud of every album that we've done. You know, I've done four albums, and every one of them was a labor of love. And you know, I put everything I had into each and every one of them, and I'll always, you know, stand up for the quality of the work and the integrity of the music. And you know, so, you know, a Greatest Hits project, you know, if it was up to me to put it together, it'd probably be some of those album cuts on some of those albums that were really some of my favorite songs that didn't make it on the radio. We didn't even ask them to play them at radio. They just got kind of left behind, you know.
Hmm. Your voice is so distinctive, and I understand that you've utilized it on TV. Are we going to be looking forward to hearing your voice on King of the Hill as Big John the Trucker?
Right, yeah. I think that'll be out around Christmas sometime. The theme of the show was kind of a Christmas thing. But I've got an HGTV show coming out this summer, and also a Food Network show that I lent my voice to, narrated. We're starting to get some of that stuff. There was also a feature-length film that came out. It was a documentary film that came out earlier this year called The Dance that I narrated as well. So, you know, we're starting to get to do some of that stuff. I mean, the Sam Elliotts and James Earl Joneses of the world, they can't do this forever, you know. I gotta get a shot someday.
You're waiting for the Verizon job to open up, huh?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, too, to note that the song that I really enjoyed and really the first time I was familiar with you was this Then They Do. I had not heard your music before because although I like country, I usually don't listen to country radio stations. So I only get the ones that some comes, you know, here, the comp versions that come in the mail. But the book came, Then They Do, and I heard the acoustic single that's available in the book. This is a great idea. Now, the song is a very powerful song, as we mentioned before, but I guess that parents wrote in about it and how it was touched, and they put this together as a book on Rutledge Hill Press. Tell me about that. That's exciting.
Yeah, it was just something that just happened. I mean, totally unsolicited. Fans started hearing this song and our country music radio listeners, and they just started writing these stories to us, about just, their own parenting experiences or family anecdotes or something that the song made them think about or how they related to it. And some of the stuff was just so good that we just decided to put it together and put it out in a little book. And I wrote a little foreword that's in there. But really, all these stories came from just ordinary people that have kids, and this song touched them in a way that compelled them to write. And I think that's just, man, that's what music is supposed to be all about.
Mm. Now, are you married again nowadays?
Oh yeah, happily married. Got two little girls with my current wife, and we got a great little life here.
It's interesting because I have two children myself. I have an 11-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl, and girls are so much different. Oh,
yeah.
My. So you haven't had the experience of a boy yet?
No, I don't. I've got four daughters, and, that comes with its own challenges, but it's on, my mama told me, she knew I was disappointed that I hadn't had a son yet. Those little girls are going to take care of you when you get old, and those boys won't.
That's true.
Yeah.
Are any of the girls?
I thought it was a cut. It, pointed right at me, but
just telling the truth. But the other thing I want to know is: any of the girls interested in? Are any of them musically inclined or athletically inclined, as you were?
Well, they all seem to be pretty much athletically inclined. They're athletically built girls, they're tall and slender, but they're well coordinated. As far as the music stuff goes, they haven't really shown me that, and I haven't pushed them in that direction either. I haven't encouraged it, as a matter of fact, because as hard as this business can be for a male entertainer, it's even harder for a woman, so I haven't pushed them in that direction at all.
See, I'm just used to my own daughter who runs around the house singing all the time and
performing. My 5-year-old, she's constantly, she's a songwriter already. She's making up songs, she's singing all day. I mean, some little silly thing can happen and she's singing about it, she's making up songs. So she'd be the one right now that I'd be looking out for, because she's very creative.
Yeah, you can tell, at that age, you can tell if they're performers, if they're creative, and, so you may actually have a budding crooner.
Oh, yeah, and she's very dramatic, when we watch videos on television, she has to stand on the coffee table in the center of the family room to watch, and she makes all the motions, and she dances right along with, she's just... She's quite the entertainer already.
Now, for folks who want to know anything at all about Trace Adkins, there's a great website. It's traceadkins.com. I was on there today. Everything's on there, including fan club information, and there's boards to post all kinds of stuff. So you want to check that out. The single, Then They Do, is available, as well as Trace Adkins' Greatest Hits Collection, Volume 1, on Capitol Records. And the book, Then They Do, from Rutledge Hill Press. Thanks so much for taking so much time out of your busy day to talk to us today.
My pleasure, Mark. Thank you.
Take care, Trace.
All right.
Bye.